This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour three of Sharp Money moving along on this Tuesday afternoon, July 30th. Deadline day here. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, it's not only the final hour of the show, but the final hour of the trade deadline. I am excited to see the flurry of deals that gets done here, especially, you know, once we get into the final segment of the show, that's when deals start flying in like crazy. The last 5-10 minutes, sometimes, you know, 5 minutes after the deadline, you get some deals announced. But while we continue to cover the trade deadline, continue to give out more bets that we've got on our slates for the evening, you've already got a winner under your belt, man. No one handicaps 3-on-3 basketball better than our guy, Dustin Sweetelson.
Well, it's easy when the number one team and number one player in the world are playing against a U.S. team that's added Jimmer Fredette over the last couple years, and they have not played in this format before like this, at this level, against a team like Serbia. We back Serbia -1.5. Easy cover. I think they won by like 5 or 6 points. So that one over, I got to tell you, 3x3 Olympic basketball, that's a fun watch. I'm going to continue to stay locked in on that. And also a little hint of where I'm heading here with my next bet, because I'm backing another Serbian superstar tomorrow.
All right, tomorrow, what do you got? Would it be the three-time MVP if we're talking Serbian superstars?
We are. Look, it's Serbia Group C taking on Puerto Rico. Win gives Serbia or Puerto Rico a chance to advance to the knockout stage in Olympic basketball in France. Puerto Rico's in a really, really weird situation, though. Since it's the final game of pool play for them would be against Team USA, they want to avoid that. Serbia ranked 4th in the world. Puerto Rico is 16th. 16th. And this is a really simple one. Puerto Rico does not have size, Joe. Everything with them revolves around guards. Jose Alvarado is their only NBA player. Alvarado was awesome against South Sudan, 26 points of 9 of 16 shooting. They also have Tremont Waiters. He had 18. He plays for the he was with the Grizzlies at one point. I don't know if he's still there. The team shot 58% from the free throw line. That's brutal. When you look at this game, though, there's a player prop that I think is absolutely the way to go. Jokic had 20 points against Team USA when they lost. Think about this. I just said Puerto Rico has no size. He did that against Bam Adebayo. He did that against Anthony Davis. He did that against Joel Embiid. What is he going to do coming off a loss in a game that his team, Serbia, absolutely needs to win? I like Jokic over 20.5 points against Puerto Rico because they're going to run everything through them because they desperately need this win.
I love it. To me, I mean, you know, when we talk about Puerto Rico and the national team not having any size, Jokic is going to bully. He bullies guys in the NBA, right? He's going to absolutely bully that Puerto Rican national team. I think it's a great call. I think you pledge allegiance to Serbia, though, maybe potentially more than the United States. Big Serbian fan.
Apparently, I'm a big, and I've got no Serbian blood. I've got Latvian blood. I've got Hungarian blood. I've got also.
You own any horses out there in Serbia, Dustin? Be honest. You got any ponies out there?
I think I am one of Nikola Jokic's horses. I'm going to pull that thing for him. Might have to spend next summer in Serbia when I have that time off.
I love it. All right. So Dustin's got two plays on Serbia, one already cashed. A couple of plays he's already given out on the diamond. Arizona's team total over 4.5. We're both on the Orioles' first 5 run line. Couple more plays on the diamond, Dustin. You were backing the Twins to beat Jose Quintana and the Mets yesterday. That didn't work out. 15-2 final score later. You're going back to the Twins, though, tonight?
Yeah, look, we touched on it yesterday. The Twins have a lot of lefty killers in that lineup. However, they did not kill Jose Quintana yesterday. They're getting Sean Manaea today, and Sean Manaea is a little bit different because Sean Manaea reminds me of Blake Snell a year ago, constantly working in and out of trouble. 16 walks in his last 34 2/3 innings pitched. That's 6 starts. In that span, he has a 1.19 whip. Minnesota's great against lefties. I think this is an opportunity for them to make him pay. I'm not going to back them in the game. However, I thought the number for their team total was a little bit low. Have to pay a little bit of juice at -130, but I'm going with the Twinkies over 3.5 runs against the Mets. And again, away team, extra at bat in the 9th guaranteed.
Ooh, is that number 3.5? I was seeing 4.5 earlier.
Well, I bet 3.5 last night. Always pays to do it the night before if you can.
Hey, how about this? Sean Manaea over 1.5 walks with our buddies over at BetMGM.
Yes.
-110.
Yes.
-110. How is that not juiced to like -160?
Look,
he's gone over that in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of his last 7.
You know, he's been a maestro at working out of trouble. At some point, that probably catches up with him. That's my thought here at the over 3.5. But the walks are clearly an issue. It was an issue against the Yankees. It wasn't an issue against Miami, but there's no one to really be scared of a pitch around in that lineup, right? Somehow was an issue against Colorado at Citi Field. Yeah, go over on the walks as well.
Yeah, Manaea is a cat who we've seen, I believe, once if not twice this year, go out and give 5 hitless innings, but he's also had like 4 or 5 walks in those contests. Yeah. Manaea over 1.5 walks is intriguing. I wasn't even looking at that until we started talking about this. But Twins team total over 3.5. Dustin, I've got one play left on my board. Of course, I've already given out the O's first 5 run line like you. I've already given out Tyler Glass now over 5.5 strikeouts, happily laying the $1.30. We both have some action, though, in this Kansas City White Sox game. Now, I think it's really intriguing when you're looking, because handicapping deadline day, like if there's ever a day in the summer to say, hey, I'm going to maybe stay away, deadline day is up there with like the game right before and right after the All-Star break, right? Because there's so many moving pieces, who's going to get pulled out of the lineup, who's going to get scratched from a start. If you had, you know, Jack Flaherty money yesterday, obviously that's a prime example of it. But when you look at the White Sox and you know morale's at an all-time low, they're going to be competing with the 1962 Mets in their inaugural season for the worst record, worst winning percentage in MLB history. And their lineup is only going to get worse today because it's either going to be the same lineup that's lost 15 straight or they're going to be losing guys today. I think it's a perfect spot on a day like this where you can actually fade them, especially when they're going up against the Royals team that, if anything, today is only going to gain morale and gain excitement because the Royals, for the first time in a while, are buyers. Dustin, what's your play in this game?
Well, and could you imagine if Crochet or Luis Robert or someone else is traded right before the game? I mean, they're just going to be despondent. So Michael Wacha's on the bump. I'm not going to lay $1.85 for the game. What I will do is shorten that up in the first 5. We'll lay a half run, -132. It's a big price to pay juice-wise. But he's been awesome in July. 2.78 ERA. He shut out the White Sox on July 19th. 7 innings pitched. 7-1 victory for the Royals. Also went 6 innings pitched. 2 earned runs against them back on April 17th. They have the better pitcher. They have the better lineup. The vibes are better in their clubhouse right now. Let's go first 5 on the Royals. Coming off an awesome win yesterday.
Immaculate vibes in Kansas City. Dustin, I'm with you. Slightly different angle, but you talk about Wacha. You talk about this matchup. He has owned the White Sox this season. He's already made 3 starts against them, 20 innings of work, just 2 earned runs. Current White Sox hitters, 99 at-bats against him. Try a collective OPS. We talked about Chris Bassitt and the OPS that the Orioles have against him, near 1,100. Collective OPS of 415 for White Sox hitters against Wacha. So I'm going under 2.5 earned runs. Got this -125 earlier today. He's also stayed under this. You talk about him having a hot July. 9 of his last 11 starts, he's lived under this mark. So Wacha, under 2.5 earned.
You know, enough isn't being made of Bobby Witt's season, Joe. I love your play. Obviously, we're on the similar side here when it comes to backing Wacha. But Bobby Witt comes through for them last night in the field at the plate over his last 30 days. Do you want to know what his batting average is?
Last 30? I'm going to say it's north of 430.
500.
In a month, over a month.
He's 44 of 88 with 7 homers, 24 runs, 22 RBI. Look, I understand.
He's live for the MVP, man.
I bet him 7-1 last week. It's now 8-1. Aaron Judge is -1100 and awesome. He's having an incredible year. And as much as I talk about the Yankees not having depth in that lineup or help to protect him and Soto, certainly has better options than Bobby Witt has. So my thought process would be, and I am a victim of this show a lot, where it's most valuable player, not best player for me. So if we're going to call it most valuable player, that matters in the narrative.
I am with you on that, 1,000%.
It frustrates me to no end. So you
have a most outstanding player award, if that's what you want. But there needs to be value in this award.
Pull Aaron Judge off of the Yankees. What are they? Pull Bobby Witt off the Royals? They're one of the worst teams in baseball. What are we even talking about here? On the year, Bobby Witt, it's not just the last month either. He's been consistent since the season started. He opened the year about 12-1 to win the MVP. He's hitting .347. He has 19 homers. He has 75 RBI. He has stolen 23 bases, and he has a .988 OPS while playing shortstop. I just think not enough is being made about him being closer to Aaron Judge than the market indicates.
I mean, if Bobby Witt wins a Gold Glove, ends up in the 30-30 club, leads Kansas City to the playoffs, OPS up near 1,000, I mean, look, Aaron Judge is amazing. And, you know, you can actually, on the value argument, which I agree with you 1,000%, you can argue this season, where would the Yankees be without Aaron Judge? Because the Yankees lineup sucks once you get past Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. Just like the Royals lineup is dreadful once you get past Bobby Witt and Salvi Perez. So that value thing actually this year for a change works in Judge's favor.
Yeah.
But man, shortstop, you know, if he wins a Gold Glove, takes Kansas City to the playoffs when they had no expectations, the Yankees, especially if the Yankees are trending downward when they had expectations and the Royals are trending upward, I'm not saying Bobby Witt should be the favorite. I'm saying there shouldn't be that big of a disparity, minus 1,100 plus 800 between those two.
So this is how the bet becomes viable, is teams start pitching around Aaron Judge. Now, it may help his case, but I also think he won't be able to get some of the numbers he needs to run away with this. It's unlikely, but that's the world we need to kind of develop here if Bobby Witt has any chance of winning this award.
Yeah, and by the way, on that note, every day, guys, like clockwork, wake up and check the Aaron Judge to record a walk prop. Still some good value there. More bets, more baseball when we come back. Sharp Money, don't go anywhere. We're releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, and more. Sign up before the end of July and receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily picks, 24/7 video, and more all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of just $1.75. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for just $19 to see everything VSiN has to offer to enhance your betting game. Don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As hour three moves along here on Sharp Money, no Patrick Maher today. I'm Joe Serrallo filling in alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And I know it's the final hour, but we're not slowing down here on Sharp Money. We've got my guy, Anthony Recker, a former New York Met. You currently see him all over your screens at MLB Network. He'll be joining the show in about 15 minutes from now. And Dustin, we've obviously had a lot of trade breaking news, trade related stuff coming through the show, but we've got breaking betting news because during the commercial break, we agreed we're pulling the trigger on something, my man.
Yeah, look, I think we have to use situations that pop up and learn from them. So yesterday, it was either during the show or during a break. I can't remember if it was on the air or not. But the Guardians and Tanner Bibee taking on Jack Flaherty and the Tigers. Flaherty was pulled from his start, or scratched, I should say. And you're like, what about that run line? We didn't do it. The Guardians go on to smash Bo Brisk yesterday. Similar situation today where the New York Yankees, Gerrit Cole's not going to play with soreness today. Will Warren's coming up. He's got like a 6.8 ERA in AAA. Aaron Nola on the bump for Philly. Bounce back spot for them. Feels like an opportunity to back the Phils here. So I think we were thinking about, do we go full game minus 1.5, even though you should never do that really with the home team because you miss out on that final at bat and things could get weird late. So I think we're in agreement here, right? First five minus a half run. I got minus 105. You got somewhere near there. We're going to add that to the card today because it feels like a really solid play.
Yeah, Dustin was able to get minus 105. I got minus 110. The best price I found, if you can get it, is even money at BetMGM. They, of course, word it a little differently. It's first five winner, and then you select Yankees or Phillies or tie if you want to really get frisky. But yeah, man, with this Gerrit Cole news, we've already talked about it at length, right? This is a lineup that we don't love. even though the lineup seems rejuvenated and they've certainly experienced a spark since Jazz Chisholm came into town. Aaron Judge is hot as hell. Juan Soto's Juan Soto, right? But there still is a lack of depth. I'm curious if Gleyber Torres is going to be in this lineup. A lot of Yankee fans seem to want Torres shipped the heck out of town.
I don't know if you saw last night. There was a play. So we talked to Gary Sheffield Routine Jr. about this yesterday. It was a double play ball, and Gleyber couldn't turn it. Trey Turner was sliding into him kind of illegally based on the new rules, but it should have been a routine double play ball. He botches it on the heels of refusing to play third base so Jazz Chisholm could play second base, where Gleyber Torres is a bad second baseman. Jazz Chisholm is a plus or a better defender. I wouldn't say he's a plus defender. He's a better defender, especially up the middle, than Gleyber. He refuses to do that. He's not part of the team in my eyes. I would deal him, but I don't know what you're going to get in return. He's having a really bad year. He's been better of late. I mentioned how bad he is in the field. I don't know what the value is. You're probably better off sticking with Gleyber if you're the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, and then Gleyber, by the way, he botches the double play. Didn't he also botch like a routine grounder last night?
Probably. He stinks. He stinks. He's having a bad year.
You know, kind of, it's almost ready to use that word cancerous in the clubhouse, right? Like,
well, I just don't
like his attitude.
Yeah.
I don't think he shows up to work putting the team first every day.
I guess my big issue is just like, what's better for the team is him moving to third base where he's not as exposed as he would be at second. And he has played third in the past. And Jazz is a much better, the team is better if Jazz is your second baseman and he's the third baseman. So he's making the team worse by refusing to move to third. But also, why does Gleyber Torres have the power to refuse to move positions?
Because he had a really good 4 months of a rookie season some years back. Like, I think Gleyber thinks he's like the next Derek Jeter. And it's like, dude, they fell in love with you immediately, and you have fallen off a cliff like Mufasa, my man.
Gleyber Torres also is a free agent, I believe, after this year. Yeah, so probably doesn't want to hurt his value playing third, but I don't know if he's noticed. He's kind of hurt his value on his own playing second.
Yeah, I wonder if they could work a deal out with a team like, I don't know if they'd want to keep him in the American League, but a Kansas City, a Seattle, someone who's desperate for a little pop in their lineup who could maybe look past the defense, the defensive element or aspect of it.
A team that wanted some pop, just added some pop, by the way, while we were in break. Brian De La Cruz, outfielder for the Marlins, is going to Pittsburgh. De La Cruz having a really solid year, hitting .245, 18 homers, 51 ribbies, and OPS over 700 right now. He's a little bit better against lefties than righties, but does have 14 bombs against righties, hits .278 against southpaws. Really solid guy there to add to that lineup. These are the types of moves teams like the Pirates need to get. Get those fringe guys you don't have to overpay for. They're not sexy additions, but they're going to give you some more legitimate major leaguers throughout your lineup.
Yeah, I think it's a great move for Pittsburgh. Not going to cost a lot. You know, Miami is just absolutely on a selling spree right now. And one thing I want to point out, those 51 RBIs, you know, that's not an earth-shattering total, right? We're at the point of the season where some of the elite hitters are probably already north of 70. But that's 51 runs batted in on the league's 29th ranked offense. He's driving in runs on a team that doesn't create a lot of opportunities to give him to drive runs in. So that's clutch hitting. Pittsburgh, better team around him. I think that this is going to be a really good deal, as they're showing right now on TV, saying goodbye to his teammates. A lot of goodbyes being said in Miami today, Dustin.
I feel it, Joe. I feel it. I feel like I'm doing a Kegel workout. That's how excited I am. Like, it's just a different feeling when you know you're on the verge of some drama going down, right? Like, it's one thing when trades can happen over the last few days. It's another thing when we have a countdown clock on it. We are 38 minutes away from this drama unfolding. We need the New York Mets to make a couple more moves here. I got 90-1 on them to win the World Series. They're going to win the World Series. They need more than Paul Blackburn.
Hey, the good news is, you know, I can do a lot. If you give me 38 minutes to work with, hopefully the Mets can do even more in the next 38. You know, it feels like the big deals have slowed down a bit, right? Yandy Diaz still out there. Do you see him being moved? I would certainly say Tampa Bay ships him out. Where do you see him going? Because for me, it's Seattle. They have a better farm system than Houston. Comparable farm system to that of the Yankees. You know, bottom half, like, you know, hovering in that 20th range. But I can't see Tampa doing the nasty, doing a deal with the Yankees. I think Seattle makes a lot of sense there.
So Yandy Diaz due $10 million next season. And then there's a club option for 2026. He'll be 34 years old at that time. He's mostly a first baseman at this point. Has experience playing third base, I think even in the outfield at times, but he's not a good defender. Here'd be my concern for Seattle, and I agree. That is the fit that makes sense because they're desperate for offense. But it also feels like if they were going to add him, they would have done it with a Rosarena. My issue with Yandy Diaz at his absolute best is what Ty France was at his absolute best. And I don't know if that's enough to put Seattle over the top. Now, they may not have a choice. This may be the best bat that they can do in the market the way it is right now. But Yandy Diaz reminds me a lot of Ty France, where it's more of contact, not as much power. And I don't think Diaz is the guy he was a couple years ago where he hit over 300 or around 300, had 15, 20 home runs in that range. I think he's a little bit less than that. I think he's more of a 275 guy. He's more of a play center than he is a middle of the order guy. But you're right. I don't know if Seattle can do better than him today.
Well, just last year, Diaz, 22 homers, 78 stakes, and a 330 average. They certainly weren't getting that out of Ty France the last couple of seasons.
No,
he had that one great year. Was it 2022?
Yeah.
The last year and a half, he stunk.
No, my point is I think last year was a bit of an outlier for Yandy Diaz. And I just think he's a corner infielder that isn't going to provide the pop that that lineup needs. But again, they may not have options. It's like me at last call. Sometimes you go with what's left over.
How is last call in Serbia usually? I know you've got a lot of experience.
Dangerous is what I would say. Very dangerous. Yeah, I don't know what else the market would be.
When you and Jokic's brothers are the last two in the bar, I would say it's not the safest environment.
So, like, I would have said a couple days ago that Dodgers might have been an option, but I think they got the versatile guys that they need. Houston? Could Houston use
the Dodgers, the thing is DH is occupied, you know, Acapado there.
No, but he can play first base. He can play a little bit of third base. Yeah. Jose Abreu's gone in Houston. Could first base be an option?
Right. Houston, that's why they're a fit. You know, it was Houston and Seattle were fits for guys like Vladdy, who now Toronto is saying they're not moving Vladdy or Bichette. Cody Bellinger, an interesting name to look for. Really complicated contract because of the options next this offseason and next offseason. But are the Cubs going to shop them? Because who knows what the Cubs are doing? A lot of question marks here. The bats are slim. There are pitchers to be had. We'll see if a big deal breaks through. Up next, though, Anthony Recker from MLB Network. He's joining the show. Don't go anywhere. Stay locked in to Sharp Money. Halfway through hour three, Sharp Money moves along on this deadline day, Tuesday, July 30th. No Patrick Maher today. I'm in form. Joe Cirillo here alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And we're going to head back to that progressive guest line with just about 30 minutes left in the show, just about 30 minutes left in Major League Baseball's trade deadline to welcome in my good buddy, former seven-year MLB catcher. Currently, you see him all over your TVs on MLB Network all the time. My guy, Anthony Recker. Reck, what's up? Oh, whoa. Who put that picture of a Braves hat on there? That's unacceptable. Wow. Reck, you can't see this.
I mean, those were my best days, Joe. I had my best days with the Braves, so I think they're just trying to make me feel comfortable. I think that's
guys, he was a Met for 3 years. Come on, someone's got to get fired for there we go. There's you in the blue and orange gear. Reck, how you doing, baby? Let's talk about our Mets. What do you think of this Blackburn deal for the Mets rotation moving forward now?
Look, he's a guy that can definitely eat up innings. He can give you some good outings. He reminds me, not necessarily stuff-wise, but what you're going to get out of him reminds me of right-handed Manaea. I mean, he's basically a similar type pitcher. You're going to get some really good outings for him where he's going to go deep. He's going to eat up innings. Then you might get a couple blow-up type outings as well. But this is a guy who's, you know, he's got some chutzpah. He goes in there and he's got like an array of pitches, like 5-6 pitches that he throws. He manipulates the ball. He misses barrels, not a big strikeout guy. But he's the type of guy that can eat up innings for you. I think it runs parallel to everything I've seen the Mets do so far in this deadline period. And that's, you know, acquiring some arms, nothing flashy, and just see if the depth helps the team, you know, maybe get over a hump. I don't think it's the hump, but maybe a hump.
Anthony, take us inside the clubhouse here. You've lived through teams selling. You've lived through teams buying. You were there in 15 when the Mets made an acquisition, Michael Fulmer, for Yoenis Cespedes. How palpable is the energy in that clubhouse when your team makes aggressive moves to go for it at the trade deadline?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, especially when you talk about that 15 team, we knew we had something. We knew we did. With that pitching staff that we had, we were like, man, if we could just score runs. I mean, everybody knew it. You know, the fans knew it. We knew it. Everybody knew it. And it just came down to, you know, our front office going out and finding the biggest bat on the market, which was Cespedes, you know, and bringing him in. It just gave us that feeling of, okay, this is the guy when the lights are on who's really going to shine the brightest. And the whole clubhouse was buzzed. I mean, we were a buzz as soon as we found out that we were getting Cespedes. I had played with him in Oakland, so I knew the type of player that he was and what he could do for us. So it was just really, it was a really exciting time. I mean, everybody is stoked. You could feel the energy, and it's, it makes the dog days of summer. It gives you that extra burst to get the rest of the way, you know, through the season and into the playoffs with that, you know, extra bit of energy that you need to really, you know, go down a home stretch and play your best baseball.
Yeah, Rick, I was telling Dustin earlier, showing up to work at Citi Field that day of the deadline when the Cespedes news, I think it broke 5 minutes after the deadline ended. It was as close to a buzzer beater as you could have gotten. And I think that the only time I felt more energy and more excitement in that ballpark outside of that weekend series against the Nationals was probably the postseason run that season. I mean, that weekend series against the Nationals when the Mets were like 500 in 2015 at the deadline, that was the closest thing I ever felt to what was recreated, of course, that October, you know, the Cubs games, the Royals games, all of that fun and craziness in the postseason. Shifting gears to a team that has really legitimate World Series sights right now, the Baltimore Orioles. They've made three deals. They got Sir Anthony Dominguez from Philly for Austin Hayes. They got Zach Eflin from Tampa Bay. And then earlier today, the most recent deal, getting Trevor Rogers from the Marlins, sending over Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers. I kind of thought Miami fleeced them in that deal. I also didn't love the Austin Hayes for Dominguez deal. What do you make of the Orioles deadline? We haven't seen that sexy move I think everyone was expecting, a Crochet, a Scooble. Are you disappointed with the Orioles deadline, or do you like it?
I'm not going to say that I'm disappointed. I think Eflin is better than people give him credit for, and I think he gives them a more realistic shot to be an elite team. I'm not saying he's a number one or two, but he's acted like a two at times with the Braves, and I think he gives you that punch between Burns, and if they can get Grayson Rodriguez back in pitching the way that he did at the end of the year last year, I know that's a big if, and you don't want to have those, but at some point, you know, with the market the way it was, with the prices, what they were for some of these players, you just kind of figure out where you stand. And for them, it was, okay, let's get some major league quality innings. Let's get a guy in Eflin in here who's got a great ground ball weight. We have great infield defense. We play phenomenally. We're an athletic team. Let's let him get those ground balls. Let's make the plays. And then, you know, we've got Burns to go out there and do the thing as the number one. Hopefully Rodriguez steps up. You get a little bit more out of some of the other guys in your staff. And now you bring in the Trevor Rogers, who can also give you some major league quality innings. He's flashed, obviously, as a rookie since then, been, I would say, a bit of a disappointment, certainly from a fan perspective, from what we've seen from him. But that said, there's still some ability there. So you kind of look at that and with, you know, kind of shoring up that bullpen a little bit. I know Sir Anthony Dominguez hasn't looked as good this year, but the stuff is still there. The numbers are still there. So I would say they did a nice job of rounding out their pitching staff. It's just going to be, can this team catch fire offensively and kind of club their way to where they want to get with the staff that they have? And they certainly have the capability because they have more firepower offensively in the minor leagues that we haven't even seen in a guy named Kobe Mayo. I know we barely saw Jackson Holliday, but they've got some more and more coming. It's kind of crazy what they've built over there.
The Dodgers, Anthony, still the shortest shot on the board for World Series futures, plus 330 to win it all. They bring back Ahmed Rosario. They go and get Tommy Edman. Are those moves that can shut down these critics of this absolutely loaded special Dodger team? Because the only way to shut those critics up is to win the World Series in a non-pandemic year. Do you think it gets them that much closer?
I don't think their moves get them there. I think they added some depth and to fill some holes while they get healthy and while they get right. And I think, to me, that's all I've seen from them so far. I know they're still out there and they're still looking for some pieces. They're still looking for a big bullpen piece. They would love to add, you know, some more quality bats, but I think that's why they went the versatility route, to take off some of the pressure from some of the guys that they already had on the roster that weren't really performing all that well, give them some major league at bats. And then from there, it's maybe they still need one starter, you know, based on the fact that they really don't have anybody who's healthy and dominant every outing outside of Tyler Glasnow, who still has shown, you know, some cracks in his armor, if you will, especially of late, because the guy hasn't thrown more than 120 innings in a season. And so they certainly still have their holes, but I think for them, it's just more about hoping that they get healthy and playing well at the right time, because they have enough pieces right now to win the World Series.
Former big league catcher, current MLB Network analyst, Anthony Recker, joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Rec, let's go cross town here. We talked a little bit about our Metsies earlier. Let's look at the Yankees. Gerrit Cole scratched today. They called it general body soreness. They're trying to now backpedal and say, don't worry, it's not the elbow, but nothing specific coming out of the Yankees camp. How desperate do you think, with Gerrit Cole, you know, and his health being a question mark, and their starting pitching as a whole regressing majorly over the last 4 to 6 weeks, how desperate do you think the Yanks will be here in the final 22 minutes?
I don't think that their focus is on starting pitching at this point. I think where they're at and what they've done, I think they still could use another bullpen piece or two. But from a starting rotation standpoint, you know, if they add an arm, I don't think it's going to be of the, you know, Garrett Crochet variety. I really don't think they're going to go out and add that kind of a huge piece. I think they would love to, but what it would cost them, I think they'll balk at the price. And because of that, I think they end up with a very similar looking starting rotation. Hopefully from their sake, an enhanced bullpen, but I like the move in going and getting Jazz Chisholm. I think they've added, you know, a lot of length to their lineup now, and you know, some versatility to move guys around. I think that really helps them. I thought that was a great move. Their offense is starting to wake up a little bit with Stanton coming back now, Chisholm there. Obviously they've had a good last couple of days. I think they're in a place right now where they're comfortable kind of riding it out and seeing where it ends up.
Anthony, in about 30 seconds, Jack Flaherty is still on the Tigers with 20 minutes to go in the deadline. Who trades for him?
Oh man, that's a guy that can help a lot of teams. If I was going to give one place, I would honestly say if the Dodgers can go out and get a starter, that might be the guy. Just because he's the type of guy that can go out and give you innings. He's, you know, obviously he's had some injury issues, but he's been going out and posting every, you know, 5 days for Detroit this year. And he can go out there and really be the type of guy that can bridge the gap between where they're at now and where they want to be when they get the rest of their team healthy.
Yeah, I love it. Robleski and River Ryan have given the Dodgers good stuff over the last, you know, 10 to 15 days. But I don't think the World Series favorites want those guys anchoring a postseason rotation, right?
I completely agree with you. And I think they're hoping to get healthy. What we saw from River Ryan the other night was fantastic. I think this kid has tremendous upside, but they certainly could use an arm, you know, to kind of back up Glasnow.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, man. Sharp Money rolls on. Don't go anywhere here on VSiN. Head on over to VSiN.com today to check out our great exclusive articles like Adam Burke's daily MLB write-ups with picks included, best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, and more, only at VSiN.com. Stop wasting your time. Go check it out today. As we get ready to wind down on this edition of Sharp Money, Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Maher on this Tuesday, July 30th. I'll be here almost all week, folks, through Thursday alongside the legend, Dustin Swedelson. And Dustin, we've got another move by our Metsies, a guy who, to quote you during the break, you've heard of everyone and you hadn't heard of this guy. Huascar Brazoban coming over from the Marlins bullpen. Pretty good numbers in a small sample size this year, 20 games for the Marlins.
Yeah, look, if you want your team to make a playoff push at the trade deadline, you prefer them trade for players you don't have to Google. Like, I just want to know the name off the top of my head. Go, yeah, that guy is either good or bad. I either like or dislike this move. I don't want to have to dive deep into Google and find out information about the player. I want an impact guy that's going to step in right away and take us deep into October.
Well, looking at Brazoban's numbers here, he's a career double-digit K per nine guy. All right, so better than a K per inning. This season in 20 games, how many innings? 30 and two-thirds innings. So he can actually give you two innings, which the Mets have seemed to need frequently out of their relievers this year. 2.9 ERA, a 2.6 FIP, and a 2.49 expected ERA. Those are all really good underlying metrics. You know, I'm assuming we gave up nothing for him. So
well, that's the thing.
I'll take it, but get me one more. Get me one more bullpen. I'll take it, but get me one more.
If you're not going to give me quality, get me quantity. And when I looked at what they gave up for Blackburn, the Mets gave up like their 27th prospect, a 22-year-old at AA. Like, that's okay. I don't hate not having like this sexy move. I am surprised that Jack Flaherty has not been moved yet, that Yandy Diaz has not been moved yet, that Finnegan from the Nats. I don't think it's happening either. Regnifo from the Angels is still out there. Taylor Ward is still out there. I do like the Pirates. They had De La Cruz from Miami, the outfielder, and they had Isaiah Kiner-Falefa from Toronto. I think that's where he was this year, the utility guy.
Yeah.
They're not sexy, just like the Mets moves, but the team is better today than they were yesterday, and I tip my hat for them actually being aggressive.
The Orioles just traded for a DH, Eloy Jimenez from the White
Sox. Whoa!
Not having a great year. I mean, you know, well, 240 average, 5 homers, 16 stakes.
Yeah, but
what did he do last year? 1864, hit 270.
He can't stay healthy, Joe. If you look at his home run per at bat, he's pretty close to elite. Like, he's a special talent. He's very, very frustrating.
It's intriguing to me, though, because Rutschman pretty much DHs every third day. You know, you've got a combination of O'Hearn, Mountcastle, Santander. I don't know. You know, he doesn't add anything defensively. He doesn't give you any positional versatility to work with. I don't know if they really needed Jimenez.
He can play left. I mean, that's a big left field.
He doesn't.
But no, he has in the past. But you're right. He's mostly a DH.
It's been about 2 years, but yeah.
I also think there's potential for Rutschman to move over to first base at times as well. That could be in his future, maybe not this year, but down the road. I think it's a great upside trade. You're buying low on a guy who was a major prospect at one point, has legit power, like legit power. And what has he been playing for in Chicago the last few years? I know it's a really bad excuse because you prefer all these guys to be competitors, but they have to show up every single day and deal with this black cloud over the organization. He had to deal with Tony La Russa as his manager. He has to deal with Jerry Reinsdorf as his owner. I just think it's an opportunity. Start over. I love the bat. I love the potential. And I have to imagine Baltimore did not give up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're buying low on a guy with, like you said, a guy with potential here. It'll be interesting to see what he does. Luis Robert, depending on how you pronounce it, still with the White Sox. Garrett Crochet, depending on how you pronounce
Crotchet.
It. Also still Garrett Crochet. Just rear back and Crochet, baby. He's still on the White Sox at the moment. So the White Sox have sold some pieces today. You know, not the two big names, but Eloy Jimenez. Paul DeJong, intra-division right there, going to Kansas City. The White Sox, I'm sure that there's still more to come. And the Orioles, at least, you know, bolstering the depth they have in terms of power hitters in that lineup. Intriguing deal there from Baltimore. Who would you say that you're most surprised hasn't been dealt yet? Because we're inside 10 minutes.
Flaherty's number one for me. I'm really surprised he's still on a team. That it would be an organizational failure on Detroit's part if they don't get anything for him. Now, remember what happened last year. The Orioles traded for him at the deadline. He was not the same pitcher. This is a guy who's had injury history the last few years, has had some issues staying on the field, but also the results have been very up and down. He's been good with Detroit, but I know Baltimore was burnt by him. That's why he's not back in Charm City now.
Yeah, the Orioles definitely not interested. Philly has a deal with the White Sox. Lefty Tanner Banks going to Philadelphia. A little bullpen help there. They got rid of Dominguez. They still could use a little more pen help. So Philadelphia, not an earth-shattering move, earthquake move like we had yesterday.
I think, Joe, the biggest thing I'm taking away is the prices in this market just weren't worth paying. It wasn't worth paying for a Luis Robert. It wasn't worth it for a Tarik Skubal. It wasn't worth it for a Brett Rooker either, right? And imagine if Mason Miller was healthy, what the price would have been on him as a closer. You would have had to overpay severely. And I actually give a lot of these teams credit for not sacrificing all of their future. Now, with that said, Baltimore gave up a lot today. We're both in agreement there. However, we're on opposite sides of Trevor Rogers. Here's the deal. If it ends with a ring, all moves are justified. You get one World Series out of trading those prospects. They could go on to be Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. If you got a title, it's okay.
Yeah, and then I saw a stat on MLB Network earlier, and I don't have the exact year. I think it's since 2013, only something like 7% of these prospects actually turn into impact players. I mean, it's so rare. You know, we go, oh my God, I can't believe what they gave up. It's so rare that these guys, you're talking less than a 1 in 10 chance that a prospect dealt on deadline day actually becomes, you know, someone that you truly do regret giving up, right? Look at the Mets deal with Cespedes. What did the Mets give up? Michael Fulmer was the centerpiece there, and he had a really good rookie year as a starter for Detroit. And then he got moved to the bullpen, became a setup guy, you know, became a non-factor, right? It usually turns out that go for it. Don't worry too much about the prospect capital. It is intriguing, though, that for a relief pitcher, for Tanner Scott, albeit the best relief pitcher on the market, the Padres gave up four guys, including three preseason top six prospects.
That's a lot for a reliever.
In their organization. Three top six for, I mean... That's a lot for because of the position you're getting back, because you're getting a relief pitcher back.
So I wanted to tell you, because this popped up on TV, the deals the Baltimore's made. I have to tell you, Tanner Scott would have been the guy that they had to get from Miami to justify what they gave up for Trevor Rogers. I like what they did, but as of this moment, 7 minutes away from the trade deadline, Baltimore's still rolling with Craig Kimbrell as their closer. I have a lot of concerns about that. However, I would give them an A-minus grade for the deadline. Eflin, Rogers, Sir Anthony Dominguez, and Eloy Jimenez, like the upside play on the last guy. Dominguez is still an upgrade for them in the bullpen, and I think that rotation got a lot longer, which they desperately needed. However, relying on Craig Kimbrell scares me to no ends as someone who has a Baltimore 16-1 ticket.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. You've got some other futures here. We're in the 2 minute warning now, but what other futures do you have that you feel have really been impacted by today?
So real quick report from Ken Rosenthal, Garrett Crochet will not be traded. Sources tell The Athletic. Crochet disrupted the market though, when he said that he wanted a multi-year deal. So that's why he's not being traded.
He'll be
here.
Shut down in minutes. I bet he doesn't pitch in September.
Yeah. Let's see. So the Baltimore trade, I feel better about my Baltimore position. Had 16-1. Now they're where they are. I have St. Louis 33-1 to win the World Series, 30-1 to win the NL. I think they are better with Fetty, but that's a ticket I'm obviously hedging. The Mets at 90-1. Yeah, I like the Blackburn deal. I like Winker, but again, wanted a bullpen arm. Houston 18-1. If Kikuchi's the only way we're getting through with the rotation with what they gave up, I'm a little bit concerned. I thought they were going to make a bigger splash. But here's the one that jumped out to me that I want to add. The Texas Rangers to make the playoffs at plus 450.
Wow. Well, I mean, what's the price on Texas to win the division? Because they're actually closer. They're four games behind the divisional lead. They're six behind the wild card. I wonder what that price is.
If you're getting a
better number, I think that's the bet. If you're high on the Rangers, I think that's the bet.
I don't hate
because they can also help themselves with head-to-head.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. And they have a bunch of games against Seattle down the stretch.
Interesting stuff. 5 minutes left to the deadline. We're going to run out of time, though, here on Sharp Money. Dustin, as usual, you did an incredible job. Shout out to you. Everyone else behind the glass in the back room, thank you all for a wonderful trade deadline special edition of Sharp Money. Dustin, let's do it again manana. For Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Joe Cirillo. We'll see you tomorrow.